This is 91.3 KUAF, your radio station for NPR programs like Morning Edition and All Things Considered since 1985. And this is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, April 20th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. In about 7 minutes, we'll spend some time with a pair of scientists from the University of Arkansas as they explain an uncommon bird they track in the Ozarks. And later, the busiest month in jazz maybe ever around here continues. Robert Ginsberg from Shades of Jazz and the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society gives us the most immediate concert lineup, including a world-class musician bringing his show here for toddlers. First, Bella Vista has only been a city for about 10 years, but in that time, it's gone through many changes. And some city leaders say it's time to better show off what Bella Vista has to offer. There's a proposal before the city council that would establish an advertising and promotion commission through a 1% sales tax on prepared food and a 3% sales tax on lodging. Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek has this report.
Bella Vista's economic development manager, Travis Stevens, sums up what's happening in the city this way.
It was never intended to be a city. And then it outgrew itself.
But now that Bella Vista has been a city for 10 years, Stevens says establishing an advertising and promotion commission is part of the growth and feels Bella Vista is about 3 years overdue for it.
We're actually the most populated city in the state without an A&P commission.
If Bella Vista got an A&P commission, Stevens says the city would have more flexibility advertising its businesses and amenities. The commission would also have a website separate from the city one, dedicated to doing just that.
If you don't exist online, you don't exist. Our neighboring communities all have very strong online presences, and so that's what we need to get as well.
Right now, the city uses money from its general fund for any advertising, but that comes with restrictions. For example, the city can't promote specific businesses. Bella Vista's communications manager, Cassie Lapp, says the city would like to change that because highlighting specific businesses drives business.
It's kind of a circular process. You know, you get people to stay when they find out things that you do have, and then you raise more money, and then you can put more money into things, and the businesses can flourish, and then more businesses will want to come in.
Stevens is hoping that will happen in one particular sector.
You know, we don't have a hotel in Bella Vista. We do have over 200 units of vacation rentals that are, you know, homes that people rent out. We would like to attract a hotel to Bella Vista, and we think having an AP might help that.
Stevens and Lapp both agree the new soft surface trail system called the Back 40 that opened last year is part of the reason the city needs to find a better way to advertise itself to outsiders.
The trail system has been a really big boom for our city, and it's bringing people in from other areas regionally and from out of state. Just last week, I was down at Subway here in Bella Vista, and there were three guys that had driven down from Kansas City for the weekend, and they were having lunch before they were ready to head out on the trails.
But they also point out there's a problem. Stevens and Lapp say a lot of people may spend the day on Bella Vista's trails, but they often go sleep and eat in other nearby communities. Tom Judson, the Bella Vista Property Owners Association general manager, says the POA also sees the creation of an A&P commission as a good thing. He says it will be a good way to promote the POA's existing amenities and those that are in the works, like the two restaurants the POA plans to open.
We now have the expertise. I don't know if they had the expertise in the past, but we know and we have the confidence that we can operate them. We can operate them efficiently and effectively and profitably. And there's clearly a need.
Judson says the POA looked at credit card data that shows the spending habits of Bella Vista residents at restaurants in the city and outside it. The difference was significant, $6 million compared to $55 million.
So you have a tremendous amount of money going down the road to other places.
One of the POA's restaurants will be at the Country Club, and the other will be at Lake Loch Lomond.
His name is Lake Point. It's going to be a banquet site with it will have weddings and anniversaries, birthday parties, and holiday parties. But we'll also have a restaurant. It'll be a little bit of a step above most of the restaurants that are in the immediate area.
Judson says they originally anticipated Lake Point would host at most 15 events its first year, but they already have 50 events under contract. He says the POA has also signed off on the construction of a beach area at Lake Avalon, which should start this winter. And last month, the POA opened a bike skills course at Medford Park. Judson says the POA realizes the age demographic in Bella Vista is much younger now than it was 10 years ago.
You know, our community is evolving. It's changing. We have to stay current.
And while the city is growing, Travis Stevens says that's not without its challenges. One of those is a lack of a municipal water system.
So it's hard to do our own development and spur growth in certain areas when you don't have control of your water system. When it was built mostly for residential purposes with just a few commercial areas. And so there's limited space now as where more commercial growth can go. So that's another one of our challenges.
Also, if you've ever driven through Bella Vista, the topography is hilly. And while Steven says that's what attracts a lot of property and home buyers, it could be a challenging landscape for business development. That's why the city is bringing in a company to help with a strategic growth plan 20 years into the future. Steven says that plan includes a downtown area.
And that's one of the things that they're really going to focus on is, you know, if Bella Vista were to build a downtown from scratch, where would be the best location?
In the meantime, here is Steven's other strategy.
If we can't grow commercially like some of our neighboring communities can, then we need more people using what we have.
And the city and the POA agree that creating an AMP commission is one way of making that happen. If the city council passes the resolution at its meeting on Monday, Steven says they estimate the tax on food and lodging could bring in more than $100,000 a year.
You know, it'll take a little time before revenue actually starts building up to where we can then use to market ourselves.
And Stevens is hoping the city can start moving in that direction in the first half of next year. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
If the resolution to create an A&P commission passes, the tax will go into effect September 1st. Two wildlife scientists from the University of Arkansas, both natives of India, ventured deep into the Ozark National Forest early last month to document an unusual bird called crossbills. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, they brought back audio recordings.
In early March, scientists Pooja Pawar and Anand Deshwal hiked deep into the Ozark National Forest near Mulberry with a small group of Fayetteville bird enthusiasts in search of crossbills. This is Anand Deshwal, a native of Delhi, India.
I decided to study crossbills for my dissertation, and I went on to search for crossbills in Himalayas. I'd literally traveled from one corner of Himalayas to the other corner, climbing up to as much as 20,000 feet, searching for these birds. But in Himalayas, nobody knows where they're found, and on top of that, they're nomadic.
Nomadic rather than migratory, he says. Crossbills are opportunistic, following the food, preferring the rich seeds deep inside spruce, fir, hemlock, and pine cones. Crossbills are the size of finches, fat finches. Males are a brick red color, females olive grayish green. Anand Deshwal's PhD dissertation is on the ecology of shrubland birds in peninsular India. And for the past several years, he's been studying crossbills in an array of habitats. For example, he says, there's just one known type in the Himalayas, but 10 types in the United States adapted to feeding in distinct coniferous forests in North America.
What is really amazing about them is these birds, their beaks, like in a normal average day-to-day bird that we see, the beak closes when the tips touch. But this bird's beak goes over. They cross each other, hence the name crossbill. The bills, that is the beak, is crossing. And these birds, they move around a lot in groups. And what we often get to see is that you can hear them feeding before you see them. Because why you can hear them feeding is because what they do is they put their beaks in between the pine cone scales and they'll ply it open. And then they have a very fleshy tongue that goes inside in between the gap that just created with the beaks, and they pull the seed out.
Harvesting pine nuts by hand for humans is not easy given the prickly cones, but red crossbills have evolved to easily extract the seeds, traveling in flocks from grove to grove. Anand Deshwal is student of Dr. Douglas James, University of Arkansas Distinguished Professor of Zoology, who co-authored Arkansas Birds with retired U.S. Forest Service biologist Joe Neal. And Joe Neal leads birding expeditions across the Mid-South. So when Anand Deshwal, who's on Neal's email bird list, caught wind that one trip involved searching for crossbills on the Ozark National Forest, he was ecstatic.
For me, like, I consider crossbills as my unicorn, something that I've always been searching. So I was like, I immediately shot an email to Journey, like, can you take me over there? I would like to see them, and if possible, Pooja and I can go and record. And Journey was, let's do it. So we headed out
Pooja Pawar, Anand Deshwal's colleague, is also a University of Arkansas graduate student of Professor Douglas James. She's a biologist, but also an eco-acoustician. She records wildlife sound environments and managed to record a few crossbills high up in the shortleaf pine forest near Shores Lake on the Ozark National Forest.
So first of all, Joe Neal is an expert in listening to these birds. So he spotted and he got all excited. There is the tube call. There is the crossbill up there. So we just turned on our recorders and started recording.
Pooja Pawar, who studied with Cornell Lab of Ornithology experts, also brought us a cleaned up recording of crossbills. Pawar submitted her recordings of Ozark's crossbills to Matt Young, a scientist at Cornell Lab of Ornithology, for analysis.
So we were initially suspecting that these are type 3 crossbills, but when we looked at the spectrogram, so spectrogram is actually a 2D image through which you can see how the what's the frequency of the sound. So Matt Young took that recording and he analyzed it, and then he told us that it's actually type 2 crossbill.
The findings will contribute to the literature on crossbills, as well as Pooja Pawar's dissertation, validating reliability of eco-acoustician methods to assess bird diversity in three different habitats of northwest Arkansas.
So I will be trying to study these methods in forest, agricultural farms, the prairies, and forest edges, which is the boundary of forest. So the bird community on a forest edge is very different from the bird that live inside forest or in grasslands or all.
She pulls out some of her recording equipment to show us.
For the recorder, I use Marantz PMD-661, and this is a very handy recorder that I can easily take to field, hang it over my shoulder, and record everything that I need to do. For the microphone, I'm using Sennheiser shotgun microphone. So this microphone is really good to record a bird singing in a distance, and this is a unidirectional microphone. So that means you can point to one direction, and the bird that is singing towards the mic will be recorded in the microphone.
In future, Pooja Pawar plans to use her eco-acoustical skills to further wildlife conservation. We emailed Arkansas bird expert Joe Neal to learn just how common crossbills are in Arkansas. He wrote back saying that large flocks intermittently invade shortleaf and loblolly pine stands around the state, including in urban places like Mount Sequoia in Fayetteville. Crossbills, which are not endangered, says Anand Deshwar, are categorized by their beak size adapted to certain coniferous forests.
This is one of the species, one of the birds, in which you can see evolution happening live. So when I say evolution happening live, what I mean is that the beaks of these birds, they have developed, like some birds have bigger beaks, some birds have smaller beak, and they have developed them in such a way that they are suitably adapted for a particular kind of pine or a pine cone that they feed on.
But like all species, they're being affected by climate change.
Because what climate change is doing is it is decreasing the areas which are colder, and it is increasing the warmer areas. And since pine cones and all, they prefer colder areas, so the range of these crossbills might get limited in a very as the climate changes, and it might get detrimental to them. So how it is going to affect them is yet to be seen, but crossbills are also known to be very opportunistic birds. In recent years, they have been reportings of them really going to the bird feeders and all. So I'm curious on finding out. That is one thing that I want to study in future, is how climate change will be affecting the crossbills for sure.
Anand Deshwal plans to return to the Himalayas to document crossbills habitat for his postdoc, part of a planned long career in wildlife conservation, and to teach. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
We have links to this and other stories on today's program at ozarksatlarge.com. Tonight at 8 on 91.3, Katie Hendrickson serves up 2 hours of classical music and arts news on Of Note. Then at 10, it's Peter Vandegraaff with classical music through the night. You can also hear classical music around the clock on KUAF2 on your HD radio at KUAF.com and on the free KUAF app. ahead this hour. There was a time when the phone line in your home or business was just a phone line. You didn't have to call it a landline to distinguish it from something else. The item remained the same, but technology forced a name change.
We're going to talk about retronyms.
Our militant grammarian unspools a list of retronyms ahead on Ozarks at Large.
On the next Fresh Air, covering President Trump, his White House, Mar-a-Lago, and the infighting, the leaks, and the tweets, we talk with Maggie Haberman, a White House correspondent for the New York Times. She'll also tell us about covering Trump in the early 2000s when she was a reporter for the New York Post and the New York Daily News. Join us.
Fresh Air every weekday at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF. 91.3 is supported by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, showing Border Cantos, sight and sound explorations from the Mexican-American border through April 24th. This free exhibition, featuring works by photographer Richard Mizrach and sculptor-composer Guillermo Galindo, uses the power of art to explore the complex issues surrounding the United States-Mexico border. More information at crystalbridges.org. 91.3 is supported by Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include radiation, CLIA-certified labs, a multidisciplinary lung clinic, and a lung cancer screening program. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Arkansas's now six scheduled executions this month have been effectively stayed again. This time, it's the result of a drug supplier suing to block usage of its product in the state's lethal injections. Sarah Weitz-Kotacek with Arkansas Public Media has the details.
A county judge in Little Rock has granted a temporary injunction in favor of the drug supplier McKesson. The company says the Department of Correction used deceptive practices to obtain its vecuronium bromide. Arkansas has been trying to execute eight men before its supply of another drug in its protocol of three expires. Testimony from both sides diverged on whether prison officials were upfront that they were ordering the drugs for use in an execution. Correction officials say they have no other supply of the drug and can't obtain it elsewhere. All executions are now effectively stayed while the state appeals.
The Arkansas Attorney General's office is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to reject requests for a stay of execution for the group of death row inmates. The state described the inmates' challenges as a last-minute delay that would manipulate the judicial process. Two inmates were scheduled to die tonight, with three others to be executed next week. In two filings with the High Court yesterday, attorneys for the inmates questioned the effectiveness of one of the three drugs used in the lethal injection process and argued the state's compressed execution schedule is contrary to the evolving standards of decency. The judge who was removed from cases involving Arkansas scheduled executions after he participated in an anti-death penalty demonstration is responding to allegations that he's biased. Pulaski County Judge Wendell Griffin wrote on his blog that he works at learning facts, weighing competing facts, and deciding whether facts prove what people claim to be true. Judge Griffin says this is what he did when issuing a temporary restraining order last Friday, preventing a drug from being used in six scheduled executions. The drug supplier, McKesson Corporation, had filed a claim in Judge Griffin's court that the state of Arkansas misled the company while purchasing the execution drug. Shortly after issuing a ruling in the case, Judge Griffin was spotted participating in an anti-death penalty vigil outside the governor's mansion, lying on a symbolic gurney. This week, the Arkansas Supreme Court removed him from all death penalty cases and asked the State Judicial Discipline and Disability Commission to conduct an investigation. Talk Business and Politics is reporting a collection of nine buildings in Bentonville is being sold for more than $25 million. The industrial buildings total 233,000 square feet and were purchased by Kansas-based Interest. The buildings are located on 28th and Southeast J Streets, as well as on Otis Corley Drive. One of the principals involved in the transaction told Talk Business and Politics there's a hope the deal leads to other opportunities in Northwest Arkansas. The Arkansas Scholarship Lottery is passing a milestone. Officials with the lottery say the game has been responsible for collecting more than $1 million in back taxes from winners. Before winners receive their money, the lottery is required to check for back taxes. Winners are also checked for delinquent child support, which is tracked separately. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton says he thinks President Trump is pleasing the people who voted for him. Senator Cotton says the White House approaches to immigration and reducing federal spending are commendable, while the senator says the failure to pass an alternative to the Affordable Care Act is unfortunate.
There was a false start last month in the House of Representatives. I think they moved a little too fast, didn't have enough buy-in from their own membership, as well as the president. And I think it's just important that they start back at the drawing board and get it right, not get it fast. I think the president has realized that as well now.
Senator Cotton made the comments while talking with Roby Brock from Talk Business and Politics. We'll hear more from that conversation Sunday morning at 9 on Weekend Ozarks at Large on 91.3 KUAF. Forward Arkansas is giving a program at the University of Arkansas $75,000 to help students pursuing a secondary teaching license in the computer science field. The gift is designed to aid 10 students in the UA Teach program and was announced this morning. Forward Arkansas is a partnership between the Arkansas Board of Education, the Walton Family Foundation, and the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation. The National Weather Service is suggesting we prepare for some rain. In fact, there is a flood watch for four northwest Arkansas counties and several counties in eastern Oklahoma from late tonight through tomorrow night. Rainfall amounts in the region are expected to range between 2 and 4 inches, and locally recorded totals of up to 5 inches are possible. The rain stayed away long enough to allow the Arkansas Razorback baseball team to defeat Memphis University last night in a game played in North Little Rock. Final score, 2-0. Arkansas is now 31-8 in 2017. Up next, a three-game series at Auburn beginning tomorrow night. The Arkansas softball team will head to Mississippi State after defeating Louisiana Monroe 9-3 last night in Fayetteville. The three-game series in Starkville begins Saturday night. And if the rain holds off tonight, the Northwest Arkansas Naturals will open an 8-game homestand at Arbest Ballpark in Springdale, hosting Springfield at 7:05. And the lineup for the OK Mozart Festival in June includes Michael Martin Murphy and the pop trio Wilson Phillips. The lineup for the annual festival held in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, has been announced and also includes chamber music and the world premiere of the Muskogee Hymn Suite, composed by Jared Tate as a commission from the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra. The OK Mozart Festival is June 8th through the 16th in Bartlesville.
That's Charlie Watts, the drummer with the Rolling Stones. And yes, he'll be on Shades of Jazz this Friday from 10 till midnight and Saturday from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. on KUAF HD3 as I present his new recording, Charlie Watts Meets the Danish Radio Big Band. We'll also hear from Orrin Etkin, Sean Jones, Peter and Will Anderson, and much more. Shades of Jazz here on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kelms. With me, our militant grammarian, Catherine Schultz. Welcome back.
Thanks. Kyle, I know you're going to like this one.
Mm-hmm.
I've got another nym for you.
Okay, like homonym or synonym, yes.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about retronyms.
Retronyms are among my favorite words in the world.
I was so surprised a minute ago when you told me you already knew this.
Yes.
And why do you know it? What's the connection?
Because retronym, the word retronym, was coined by someone with an NPR connection.
That's right. Do you remember his name? Frank Mankiewicz.
Frank Mankiewicz,
mm-hmm.
Right.
Used to be president of NPR.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, so, okay, so what is it?
So it's a word that is now different or than it used to be because of changing times.
Right.
So Phantom of the Opera with Lon Chaney, we now call it a silent movie. But guess what? When it came out, you didn't call something a silent movie because there were no other movies. It was just
right.
Movie.
Right. Right.
Yes.
Exactly. So then you've answered my next question for you is what's the major cause of retronyms?
Changing times and technology.
Yeah, exactly. But it doesn't mean new technology. Well, and he pointed this out, the silent
right.
film.
Right.
Handwritten.
Handwritten because used to be the only way you could write.
Yeah. And it came into use in the late 1500s.
Because?
About 100 years after the printing press.
Right.
Came to England.
Everything was written.
Yeah.
And then, right. Was it printed or handwritten?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So here are other retronyms that aren't that new.
Okay.
And I want you to tell me why they were coined.
Okay.
Home movie.
Home movie. Well, because the video camera was invented or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But also, and maybe you're more, maybe that's a better explanation of it. I was thinking you used to have to go out for movies.
Right. Right.
But now you can watch it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, I've been intrigued with something for years. I just realized a few years ago, we see a movie in the theater. Mm-hmm. We watch a movie at home.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And I guess that that's sort of, you know, this antiquated idea that you would go see a play or see a movie. Yeah, but at home I watch a movie.
Yeah.
I don't see it. Yeah.
There's not much
difference between
see and watch, I don't think.
No, but it's just sort of with the experience, I guess. Not a technical
just
term.
Just to make a difference.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, so here are some more old ones.
Mm-hmm.
Manual transmission.
Oh, sure. Just now you've got the automatic transmission. So with the development of not having to shift anymore.
It used to just be transmission, right?
Right. And now there are far more automatic transmissions than manual.
Right.
Yeah.
Manual typewriter.
Oh, electric typewriter.
Sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Here's one you'll like, AM radio.
Right, because it used to be just radio.
Yeah.
And then the FM band is used, and you had to distinguish. That's what happens. These are all about distinguishing.
Yeah. And you know, almost all. And one thing I'll note to you is that when I was researching this, I found one page. I got so tired of this page. It had retronyms categorized in maybe 50 categories.
Yeah, I can.
And each category had long lists of things under it. It's incredible how many there are.
Yes.
But, I mean, technology has been around for a while. So.
Exactly.
Black and white film or TV.
Yeah. You had film. And then color film.
Yeah.
Kodachrome
comes
along, and you have to distinguish.
I guess TV was color when you first were aware of it.
Well, it may have been, but we had a black and white TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not a TV, but a black and white TV. In fact, funny story, first time I ever saw that I remember seeing Wizard of Oz, my brothers had told me, oh, wait till she opens the door in Oz.
Uh-huh.
And I waited, and they're like, yeah, okay.
So what?
Yeah. And they had forgotten, because they had seen it.
Yeah, they had
the color
seen it in color.
Yeah.
That's good. Broadcast television.
Because of cable.
Yeah.
Right.
And satellite now and dish and all that. This one I love. Corn on the cob.
Oh, because when the kernels started being cut off and so
it just used to be corn.
Right.
The only way you could get it was on the cob.
Right.
And then they started canning it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that as a retronym.
I wouldn't have either. Here's one you love. Day baseball. Or night baseball,
right,
I guess.
Right.
Because it all used to be day baseball.
Yeah, and you hear the term day game a lot. They're gonna play a day game tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm. And why was the change?
Because they invented lights in Cincinnati. Well, they didn't invent lights in Cincinnati, but Cincinnati is the first place they had night baseball.
They used them. Mm-hmm. And here's another one I hadn't thought of. Contiguous United States.
Thank you, Hawaii and Alaska.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay, finally, Kyle, I want you to name as many retronyms as you can for the following.
Okay.
Milk.
Oh, gosh. Skim milk, homogenized milk, goat milk, I mean, buttermilk.
Sure.
Yeah.
Soy milk, all
that.
Yeah. Mail.
Email. Snail mail. Although I don't know if you count that as a word, but, well, sure.
I would, sure.
Yeah, because snail mail now refers to the ones that are delivered.
Right.
Yeah.
And one more.
Email, snail mail, and
voicemail.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, why we ever even started calling voicemail mail, but I guess it was just convenient because we send it.
Because at some point you have to explain to people what this new thing is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the mail, but it's your voice.
But it's your voice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mother.
Mother.
Mother. And technology and social change.
Stepmother? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know.
Biological.
Oh, right.
Surrogate.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe even Petri dish. I don't know.
Other
things. Restaurant.
Carry-out restaurant?
Mm-hmm.
Dine-in restaurant? Yes.
Sit down?
Right.
Take
fast
out.
Food?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Fast food, that's right. Soap?
I don't know.
Bar soap?
Oh, right, because now you can...
Liquid?
Yeah.
Gel? Body wash?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Telephone?
Well, cell phone. To that matter, when I was a youngster, we started having, you know, dial phones.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, because most people were getting push button phones.
Right.
And we
right.
still had a dial phone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And cell and wireless.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Do you remember what POTS, POTS stands for? It's probably about 20, well, I don't know. I'm probably wrong on that. Probably about 30 years old. Plain old telephone service. It was a term that came up when all of the different things came up. I commented on a Facebook post recently about whether we remember the day before dial phones.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the commenters even told their old number, the number assigned to your phone, the one you said to the operator
right
when you wanted to place a call. I grew up in a tiny town, Marianna, Arkansas. My home number was 254.
Right, right.
That's short enough. But the number for the grocery store that my daddy ran was 9.
Can I tell you my two favorite retronyms?
Please.
Acoustic guitar.
Good. Yeah. Because, yeah, electric.
Right.
Yeah.
World War One.
Oh, yeah. And that,
yes.
That was a lot. And I, you know, I would have a long discussion with a linguist or whoever it is who would be interested in this stuff about attaching the numbers. Is that not just, you know, describing things or naming things as a, well, I mean, I
sure,
guess that's what retronym it is. But
World War One was maybe the Great War or the World War.
Before
so it
the
was
second
called
one came.
Right.
Oh, that's yeah. true. Of course it wouldn't be called World
yeah.
War One.
So World War Two will always yeah. be World War Two.
It reminds me, my husband tells me he used to introduce his first wife as his first wife.
Well, we're just going to leave that one right there. Our militant grammarian is Catherine Sherrills.
A small-town lawyer's mother prodded him into taking on pharmaceutical distributors.
She made some offhand comment to the rest of the family that somebody in our community should do something about it, and that's when one of my brothers looked at me and said, isn't that what you do for a living?
I'm Kelly McEvers. How West Virginia counties are going after one link in the deadly opioid chain. This afternoon on All Things Considered.
Today from 3 to 6 on 91.3. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Robert Ginsburg. And Robert, Jazz Appreciation Month doesn't stop. Well, I guess it does eventually, right? April 30th. But until then, it seems like
it's, we're rolling.
Yeah.
We're rolling. What a great weekend we just had with Justin Coughlin's trio doing workshops at the university and working with the Youth Jazz Orchestra. But we're full steam ahead.
Before we get into the future, just a little bit of the past, you said working with the Youth Orchestra. I mean,
yeah, it was this trio, Justin Coughlin's trio, world-renowned, you know, Quincy Jones producing them. They're a relatively young group of guys, and they were just so engaged. They wanted to know what was happening in the community and how they can engage above and beyond any contractual agreements they had. So the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Youth Orchestra, which is part of the Walton Arts Center's jazz initiative, had a rehearsal on Saturday. Usually their rehearsals are on Sunday, but it was Easter Sunday. And Justin Coughlin's trio, being in town, got wind of this, and they said, take us down there. We want to see what they're doing. They sat and listened to them play. They critiqued them, and then they sat in with the kids. It was really thrilling.
Which the young artists had no idea was going to happen.
No, absolutely not.
Wow.
You know, what I've noticed, Kyle, is those sort of connections when young people who are trying to find their way into this music can have a connection to a world-renowned artist kind of out of the blue and make eye contact and have them sit next to them and play, it can be life-changing. It can really set into motion a whole nother level of engagement for these kids. So it was a heartwarming moment for me.
Excellent. Now let's look toward the future. What's left?
This weekend, on Sunday, the third annual Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society's celebration of jazz, April being Jazz mm-hmm. Appreciation Month, and the season, this gorgeous season of spring. So their Jazz in Bloom concert is at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks with a really thrilling trio, Peter and Will Anderson trio. Twin brothers, they both play saxophones and clarinet. They switch off, and there's a guitar player in the group. That event is sold out.
That's both good news and bad news.
It is good news and bad news. We may have to expand to more tents out there to accommodate more people for this event. But if you haven't heard Peter and Will Anderson's trio, check them out online. What a great group.
What if someone's hearing us right now and thinking, oh, shoot, I wish I would have known earlier so I could have gotten tickets before they sold out.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society, now in their 25th year, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting, presenting, preserving, and celebrating this music that we love. And it's a membership organization. Anybody's entitled to join. But even if you don't want to join and just want to learn more about them, go to the website, Dig Jazz, like can you dig it, digjazz.com. And you can sign up there to be on the email list so that you're
alerted.
Yes, you're alerted about upcoming events. And if you have an event, you can have it posted there. And it's a great kind of clearinghouse for all of the jazz, the jazz that's blooming all over Northwest Arkansas.
So beyond Sunday and the Jazz in Bloom concert that's sold out, there are still other opportunities.
Absolutely. It's a packed month for jazz, and it's very thrilling that the Walton Arts Center has engaged in a big way for Jazz Appreciation Month, coming off of a weekend of music. And on the 27th, there will be a jazz performance for preschoolers. Don't get many of those, Kyle. This is an Israeli-born jazz clarinetist and saxophonist named Oren Etkin, E-T-K-I-N. And he has really made waves around the world with not only his performing band, but also a project he calls Timbalulu. And it's a program that's really for kids. It's concerts for kids. He does classes for kids. He performs in major venues and festivals around the world. He and his band kind of take the audience on an interactive musical journey around the world. It connects jazz to music of the world. He introduces preschoolers to the instruments. It's just so much fun. I saw this performance in New York City, and there was probably 75 toddlers there, and they were all up dancing, and they're learning about what a clarinet is. And so that performance is taking place in Star Theater on April 27th at 6 p.m., Jazz for Kids, and there's still tickets available for that. The following night, Oren Etkin will be performing with his band, his quartet, and it's a program called What's New? Reimagining Benny Goodman. So you and I talked about the significance of this. It's almost hard to even begin to discuss the significance of this band.
Well, okay, so this ensemble is Benny Goodman, who is a legendary, towering, altering figure in American music.
Altering in so many ways. His band really fundamentally launched the swing era, and this was during a very depressing time. It was the Great Depression, and it was like the polar opposite emotion of being depressed. how are we gonna survive this? We better swing. And it also kind of represents this convergence of this Jewish boy who grew up in New York and who became infatuated with early jazz, but also embedded in his DNA was this Eastern European sort of klezmer music. So you have the oppression that took place among the Jews in Europe during this time.
Right.
So these two things came together, and Benny Goodman was touring this quartet, and you know who was.
Well, okay, so you have Gene Krupa, who is one of the best drummers who's ever lived on the planet.
Right.
And innovative. And you listen to the Benny Goodman versions of Sing, Sing, Sing. And what Gene Krupa's doing on the drums decades ago is amazing. Teddy Wilson, Lionel Hampton. I mean, the four of them separately are among the best musicians of their century.
Absolutely.
And that they came together.
And not only did they came together against all odds. Benny Goodman put this band together knowing that it was an integrated band.
Which was not done very often at the time.
It was really the first band that was playing major venues that was integrated in this country.
And part of the reason is because Benny Goodman would say, you better take this integrated band or we won't play your city.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It was also an unusual instrumentation. Clarinet, vibraphone, piano, and drums, no bass. So what Oren Etkin has done is he is in many ways mirroring this band, same instrumentation with an incredible group. He has Sullivan Fortner on the piano, who has played with jazz at Lincoln Center. He embodies the history of this music, but he can also channel the essence of Teddy Wilson, which is wonderful. Mm. He's got Matt Wilson on drums, a great drummer, and a vibrant, sort of vivacious character, in many ways reflecting Gene Krupa's personality. And Steve Nelson on the vibes, one of the masters of the vibraphone. Oren plays clarinet. So it's the same instrumentation, but they're not just recreating this music. They're paying homage to what Goodman did. They play a lot of his tunes, but they also, it is reimagining this music. They're injecting their own elements of influence into it. Finally, I'll just plug in a teaser because maybe we'll talk about it next week, but the premier concert of the Northwest Arkansas Jazz All-Star Youth Ensemble coming up, International Jazz Day, April 30th.
Okay, we will talk about that next week.
All right.
But not bad to give people a heads up because some things sell out. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Kyle.
That's an example of the music we might hear Ornette can play at next week's show for toddlers. In about 1 minute on Ozarks at Large, all those roads under construction, when will we be able to drive on them? Philip Taldo of Springdale is a member of the Arkansas Highway Commission, and he discusses roads and highways and more on this week's edition of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report, just ahead.
Can turning cow poop into energy be profitable?
It heats our home, it heats our workshop, it heats all the hot water in our barn.
Making green energy and money.
We save money, they make money.
I'm Mike and Scott. Join me for The Pulse when we'll look at renewable energy.
60% of our power is green.
Challenges and innovation.
That Earth Day special coming up this Sunday at 3 p.m. on KUAF.
I'm editor Paul Gatling, and this is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Ahead today, we'll visit the tech industry with some insight from one of the keynote speakers at the Women in Information Technology Conference held recently at the University of Arkansas. We'll also talk transportation and visit with State Highway Commissioner Philip Taldo of Springdale. And we'll also touch on some data from the banking sector that you can find in the latest issue of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal. But first, the state's tech industry and access to tech education have each expanded in recent years, and a key objective moving forward is to connect local talent to local jobs. That was a key theme from the Women in IT conference held last week at the U of A. Governor Asa Hutchinson spoke about his support for women in technology careers, a key goal, he said, for his computer science initiative. Other keynote speakers included Lisa Tuttle, the Chief Information Security Officer for North Carolina-based SPX. Tuttle said events like the one in Fayetteville are critical to get women not only interested in the technology field, but believing it's a pathway to success.
I think people don't always realize how broad technology is. You think, oh, it's being an engineer or a developer and that's all. No, it's such a far-reaching thing when you think about technology and how it drives every business, every service out there, you know, and the ever-changing nature of it. There are so many good-paying, available jobs today if we could just get women and minorities, others, to come to the table for these jobs. The opportunities are there. We just have to keep, you know, I guess, mentoring, reaching out, you know, lifting people up. I think women have a huge power to influence behavior. You think about how we manage households and budgets and schedules. We influence kids to go to school when they don't want to and husbands to go to doctors when they don't want to. We can have that same influence in this side of our lives as well. We just have to take, you know, hold of that power we have and push it forward.
The Women in IT Conference was sponsored by the Sam Walton College of Business at the U of A. You can read more about the event in a story by Jennifer Joyner at our website at nwabusinessjournal.com. This is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Transportation leaders are constantly looking for ways to improve services, and the topic always seems to drive discussion in the state. Pun intended. And for the next 10 years, Springdale real estate executive Philip Taldo figures to play a significant role in those discussions. Taldo was appointed by Governor Hutchinson late last year to the 5-member Arkansas Highway Commission and began the 10-year term in January. Taldo is also a longtime member of the Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport Authority, and he spoke recently with Business Journal reporter Jeff De La Rosa about near-term goals with the Highway Commission and a couple of projects that will have an impact on travelers at XNA.
What will your focus be in the near term as a commissioner?
I guess the first thing is that to really learn the process and how a road or a highway goes from being a dirt road or just a line on the map to being a functioning part of our transportation system. It's a long process, and sometimes it takes 2 or 3 years, and sometimes it takes 10 or 15 years. So learning the process the first year or so will be my priority.
You've also served on the Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport Authority for over a decade. What are some key projects in the works at the airport?
As you would expect, there's a lot of things going on out there because the employments keep rising along with the population here in Northwest Arkansas. And one of the big projects that we just started about a couple of months ago is a new parking deck. And that's gotten to be an important piece because, number one, we were running out of just ground surface parking. And number two, it was getting difficult for people to park way out and then have to walk into the terminal during bad weather and rain. So this is going to be up close to the terminal, and it'll be a lot more convenient and safe for the passengers.
How important is having premium parking that the new parking deck will offer?
It's really important to the business travelers. The casual traveler that just goes on an occasional vacation or trip, it's not quite as important, but 70% of our traffic out there is business people, and they like to get in, get parked, and move pretty fast, and have a convenient experience there. So it's real important to the people that, especially the business sector.
What is the status of the proposed access road for the airport?
Well, that's a good question. it's one of those things that has gotten mired in environmental studies, and there is a lot of things going on in that area out there. There's a lot, of course, everybody's heard of the cavefish and the bats and the frogs and all of that, and everybody is really environmental interests are weighing in on it, so it's become pretty complex to get that accomplished. And then number two, the funding mechanism has been hard to work through because the FAA really doesn't fund anything that is not directly connected and for the exclusive use of the airport itself. So in order to get funding from FAA, it has to be exclusively for airport use. We are working on trying to decide if we need to do maybe a partnership between FAA and the state and have dual use highway if we can get that approved. We think that's a win-win situation going forward.
That's Philip Taldo of Springdale talking about his role with the State Highway Commission and progress being made at the Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport. We're back after this.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas,
The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. And OneCom. OneCom provides communications options to help your business adapt to today's demands with tomorrow's technology. With opportunities in virtualization, redundancy, or maximizing your efficiency. Learn more at onecom.com. That's one-comm.com.
Finally today, Oklahoma-based Armstrong Bank has the best return on assets of any bank doing business in Northwest Arkansas. That's according to the annual list you'll find in the latest issue of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal. ROA is a popular metric banks use to track profitability, and at the end of 2016, Armstrong had an ROA of 2.24%, First Security Bank at 1.99%, and Grand Savings Bank at 1.95% were not far behind. Armstrong Bank has four offices in Fort Smith and another in Springdale, thanks to its 2015 acquisition of Fort Smith-based Benefit Bank. And we'll leave it there for today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. Remember to follow our coverage of regional business news anytime at nwabusinessjournal.com. I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
Support for 91.3 comes from Malco Theaters, featuring the Metropolitan Opera April 22nd at 11:55 with a live performance of Tchaikovsky's Eugene Onegin. Tickets and more information available at fandango.com. Walton Arts Center Starlight Jazz Series welcomes saxophonist Orrin Etkin April 28th. In this performance titled What's New? Reimagining Benny Goodman, the ensemble draws from Goodman's repertoire and pays tribute to the swing era with their own musical improvisations. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets. A service of the Walter J. Lemke Department of Journalism and the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Central City. We'll end today's show with the band The Ozark Travelers. You can find out much more about them at their Facebook page. This is the song Life is But a Melody. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for listening.